We begin this second part of Advent with the very beginning of the New Testament. The first book is the Gospel of Matthew, according to Matthew, and the very beginning of the Gospel according to Matthew is the genealogy of Jesus Christ. I know that when people read the genealogy or hear it read, they tend to get a little bit bored. Sounds like an endless series of strange names. I hope you can get past that first impression, because there's a lot to this gospel passage. In fact, more than we can go into in one brief homily. But the first impression is that, you know, it's just a bunch of names. Who's Aminadab? They're not even familiar names. If it was, William and Antonio and Peter and Jonathan, I mean, names that sound familiar, we could say, oh, yeah, this is the story of the human family. But these names, to our sensibilities, are just weird. I never met anyone named Uzziah. Maybe, and so a lot of these names are completely unfamiliar to us. There are a few familiar ones, sure. There's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, there's David, of course there's Joseph. Perhaps we can reflect on this genealogy in light of a modern concern, that is the need for identity. Identity has become a kind of flashpoint nowadays for controversy because of what's called identity politics. Everyone who can claim to belong to a disadvantaged group or a group that's being discriminated against, anyone who can claim the identity of someone who has been suffering an injustice, suddenly has a claim to public attention, or government attention, or money. So it seems that people are scrambling for identities all the time. Identity politics. There's also, it's only come up in the last 10 years or so, a very strong push toward changes of people's gender identity. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Now, many people are saying that a person can choose his or her own gender. Not the way we are born, but the way we choose to be, or the way we think we should be identified. It's all about identity. There's a psychological condition now referred to as gender identity discordance. Gender identity discordance, where people whose idea of themselves doesn't match their biology. I'm just mentioning this because the idea of identity has arisen in an age when the cultural fabric is more unraveled and people don't know who they are from their family and their culture, their society, the way people did in the past. It wasn't that long ago, let's say go back 200 years, for example. People were very easily identified by where they lived and who their family was. And those things didn't change. I mean, people didn't move all around. If you were born in Las Piñas, you lived in Las Piñas your whole life. That was the way it was. If your father was a tailor, you were a tailor. That's the way it was. It was rather stable. And of course, there's always exceptions, and people have always pretended to be someone that they're not. But in modern times, that tendency has multiplied so that people are not only pretending to be something that they're not, they don't even know who they are at all. Okay, so we go to the genealogy. This is the old way of identifying a person. Who is this? Well, this is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, who is this Jesus Christ? Well, let's establish his identity based on his family heritage, his familial, his genealogy. And this was the way people identified themselves for countless centuries. Who are you? Well, you are, give your name, so Daniel. And where do you live? Well, Nazareth. Okay, so Jesus was Jesus of Nazareth. Well, a lot of people lived in Nazareth, so that wasn't enough. You identify yourself by who your father is. Jesus, son of Joseph of Nazareth. That's how he would be identified. Now, most people didn't have to go back further than their father or maybe their grandfather. Because once you go back to the great-grandfather, nobody knows him anyway, and it's not that significant. So a person might say, Jesus, son of Joseph, son of, what is it? Jacob, in this genealogy, in Luke's genealogy, Joseph has a different father. But anyway, so you only have to go back one or two generations, because the further back you go, the more obscure it gets. Different with royal families. Royal families, they trace their lineage back to the king, how many generations back. Okay. Jesus comes from a long line of generations, just like everyone else does. He comes from a long line of basically ordinary people. People who nobody knows. Most of these people, nobody knows. Just like most of our ancestors, nobody knows. He also comes from the line of David, who is king. He comes from the heritage of Abraham, the father of the Jews. So Jesus is a Jew, he's a son of David, but he's also one of countless other people who come from the same line. He has a few, you might call them glitches, you know, different questionable heritage. Solomon's mother was kind of stolen by David from Uriah. Then there's the curious issue of Ruth, who was a foreigner, married into the Jewish line. Different strange stories. But that's not that unusual. I mean, go back into your own genealogy and you'll find kings and criminals and illegitimate children and rich people and poor people. If you go back far enough, you'll find the same basic story. So the point being, Jesus comes from the human family. He's one of us. He's as much one of us as any of us is one of us. He didn't just plop down from the clouds and say, here I am. He was born into the human family. That's what this genealogy establishes. But he doesn't have a human father. And that's what throws us when we get to the end of the genealogy. So-and-so, father of so-and-so, father of so-and-so, father of so-and-so, father of so-and-so. Until we get to Jacob, father of Joseph. Joseph, not the father of Jesus. It doesn't say that. It says Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who's called the Christ. So Jesus, who is one of us, also is unique. This will come up again in the next, tomorrow's gospel, when we, the next couple of days, when we reflect on the miraculous conception of Mary. But just sticking with this idea of the genealogy and the human history, this is something for us to reflect on who we are from a human perspective and who we are in the eyes of God, in the plan of God. If you look at us from the human perspective, we're all pretty much the same. We're all the children of our fathers and our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers. And we might have something to boast about, but we probably have a lot to be embarrassed about. Ultimately, you go back far enough, and no one knows anything about his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. But God knows God knows every single person in our line. He knows every single detail about what led to our existence. He knew it all ahead of time, and he, you could say, followed the whole chain that led to our being here. Something to reflect on, that as insignificant as we are and as obscure as our roots are, it's not insignificant to God, and our roots are not obscure to God. He knows every single person by name. There are a lot of scriptural reflections on this sort of thing. One of the ones that came to mind is one of the Psalms, Psalm 90. You could look this up if you have a little time to ponder the scriptures. Psalm 90 is a reflection on man's insignificance and God's omniscience, his knowing everything. Perhaps this Psalm came to my mind just a couple days ago when Brother Vic died. Some of you know Brother Vic. He died on Sunday. It was a shock. I mean, who even knew he was sick? All of a sudden he's dead. He's only 73. And what came to my mind reflecting on his passing away was that passage where it says, we have 70 years. God gives us 70 years, or 80 if we're strong. You know that passage. It comes from this psalm. That's why I have it in my mind, Psalm 90. O Lord, you have been our refuge from one generation to the next. So the generations come and go, but God doesn't come and go. He's our refuge no matter which generation we belong to. Before the mountains were born, or the earth, or the world brought forth, you are God without beginning or end. You turn men back into dust and say, go back, sons of men. We all come from dust, and our bodies return to dust. To your eyes, 1,000 years are like yesterday, come and gone, no more than a watch in the night. 1,000 years to God is nothing, and yet he knows every second of it. You sweep men away like a dream, like grass which springs up in the morning. In the morning it springs up and flowers, by evening it withers and fades. That's what we can see if we look at one particular person or one particular generation. You say, well, as insignificant as a flower. Except God knew it all. All our days pass away in your anger. Our life is over like a sigh. Our span is 70 years, or 80 for those who are strong. Make us know the shortness of our life, that we may gain wisdom of heart. Make us know the shortness of our life, that we may gain wisdom of heart. This is, you know, a little bit of a deviation from reflecting on the genealogy, but the fact that God is our refuge from one generation to the next, that every generation is in his eyes important, and that we are the result of countless generations, and God used or made use of all the people who came before us to lead to us, is something to ponder. Ultimately, we are not determined by who our ancestors are. That's part of who we are, yes, part of our identity. But our deeper identity is that we are children of God. We are children of God. We are held in the palm of his hands. And even though we might look to others like a flower that springs up in the morning and fades in the evening, even though we might look like that to ourselves, to God we are a precious son or a precious daughter. And his becoming man, his entering into the human family, is for each one of us. So God knows all these names. We don't know them, but he knows our name too. So as we prepare for the coming of the Messiah, we pray for the celebration of Christmas, we also reflect on our own place in God's plan. Insignificant? Sure. By comparison to God, everything is insignificant. But precious and unique and loved by God.